This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Few ingredients in the history of cooking have had as toxic a reputation as MSG, monosodium glutamate. Have you ever ordered your Chinese takeout with no MSG, or reached for the canned soup at the grocery store with the no MSG added label? Well, you're not alone. For decades, MSG has been popularly linked to everything from headaches to aggravated asthma to brain damage. Well, today we ask, does MSG deserve its nasty reputation? What does four decades of science tell us about MSG's health effects? Dr. Katherine Westner is here to help us answer those questions. She's an allergist and immunologist at the Scripps Clinical Medical Group in San Diego. She's also the author of the chapter on MSG in the medical reference book, Food Allergy. Welcome. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you so much for having me.
Tell us precisely, what is MSG?
So MSG is monosodium glutamate, as you said, and it's made up of glutamate, which is a non-essential amino acid. And when you eat protein, it constitutes about 20% of our dietary protein. And it occurs naturally in foods, both as a free glutamate and as well as bound to protein in the foods. And it's responsible for one of our five distinct tastes. So if you remember back to school when they mapped out the tongue where you can taste sweet, salty, bitter, and sour, there's a fifth taste, so-called umami, which is unique for glutamate.
So if glutamate is already in the food that we're eating, why did it become such a cooking staple?
So glutamate, when you add glutamate to food, or you used aged cheeses or fermented foods that naturally get high levels of glutamate, they impart this umami taste or this very savory taste. So they greatly enhance the palatability and the tastiness of the food.
Mm-hmm. And we usually hear about MSG being used in Asian cuisine. Is it in other foods as well?
Yeah, so it's not unique to Asian cuisine. I think the problem arose in the 60s when an Asian physician wrote a letter to the editor to the New England Journal of Medicine that kind of set off this controversy that still swirls to today regarding MSG. But it's found in all cultures. So if you like pizza, having a pizza with tomato sauce and cheese and mushrooms, you've just had a tremendous amount of umami. I think if it was gone by the name umami, we probably wouldn't have quite the fear that we do with regards to MSG, because it just sounds so scary.
Let's go back to that initial, it was a letter to the New England Journal of Medicine, you said, and it described what was called a Chinese restaurant syndrome, right?
That's correct. And what he described was, it was almost a tongue-in-cheek kind of letter, but he sent a letter in describing that when he ate in Chinese restaurants in the States, that he would experience a burning sensation of the neck and forearms and his chest, some facial pressure or tightness. He would develop some chest pain, headache, maybe some upper body tingling and weakness, palpitations, numbness, and fatigue, which was very short-lived and resolved without any sort of sequelae. But at the time, he actually hypothesized that it may be something else in the food. He wasn't actually pinpointing MSG. He thought maybe it was the cooking wine or the high sodium content or some combination thereof. But very shortly after that, people started looking specifically at MSG, and I think that's when it began its process to being the most vilified food additive known to mankind.
So why is it that people are so sure that it's the MSG in the food?
You know, that's a wonderful question. I don't think we know why people believe that so strongly. When you actually do challenge studies where you take people and blind them as to what they're receiving, most of the time you can never reproduce any of the symptoms that they had felt was due to the MSG. To me it's fascinating that it continues to be such an issue, but yet they'll love their aged hams or their dry aged beef, but yet are terrified of MSG that might be added to their food. I think what's lost in all of this is people don't realize that MSG that comes out of a salt shaker versus naturally occurring glutamate in our foods responds in the body the exact same way. Your body has no way of differentiating between the two.
So studies in which people, as you say, which people have been given MSG and they don't know it and they don't react any differently. than when...
Correct. I think what one needs to understand is the physiology of what happens when you actually ingest MSG. So when you even eat very large quantities of MSG, it's taken up very quickly by the intestinal cells, the enterocytes, and they actually use it as a source of energy and throw it through the Krebs cycle, and you generate energy for the intestine. So little of it actually gets across from the intestine into the bloodstream that even if you eat a meal that's very high in MSG, very little of it is in the blood.
And in fact, there were studies early on when the Chinese restaurant syndrome was published in the New England Journal that people studied it, and there were studies in mice that you talk about that say they were not done very well, but added to the strength of the rumor.
That's correct. So there were studies that were done which were non-physiologic, meaning that they injected newborn mice with very high doses of MSG, doses of MSG that as a human we couldn't even physically eat as it would cause too much nauseousness. But when they injected these neonatal mice with high doses of MSG, it led to some toxicity in the brain. They actually saw some brain damage. So that also heightened this concern that perhaps, you know, the MSG that we're adding to our food is going to cause brain damage and cause issues with weight gain and hormone problems, because glutamate is a naturally used neurotransmitter. So it's what our brain uses for the neurons to signal. So the thought was if you had high doses of glutamate, it would get into the brain, it would damage these brain cells because they would be overstimulated and lead to brain damage and serious health consequences. But it turns out that MSG that you ingest doesn't cross the blood-brain barrier, so it can't, even if you ate a tremendous amount of MSG, it's not getting into the central nervous system.
Wow. Could it be something like the placebo effect or something else? You expect it to happen, so it happens.
Well, maybe the nocebo effect, right? So, because it causes a bad outcome as opposed to a good outcome. Yes, that's true. When they do studies where you take people that are strongly entrenched in their belief system that they have sensitivity to MSG, half the time they'll react to the placebo as well as the MSG with the same sort of symptoms.
Mm. Is it true that there are high levels of glutamate in breast milk?
There are naturally occurring high levels of glutamate in breast milk, and the thought process is that the baby needs the glutamate, again, for the intestinal health.
Mm. Wow.
And what was interesting is when that data came out about the neurotoxicity in the late 60s, at that point there was actually glutamate that was being added to infant formula, and at that time they withdrew it out of concern that potentially there may be an effect. But it looks like it's actually physiologic when you study human breast milk.
Now, you're an allergist, and I know that you did a study looking at the effects of MSG on people with asthma. Why do that study?
Great question. So in the 80s, there was another letter to the editor in which two women were described as having severe asthma exacerbations about 12 to 14 hours after eating a Chinese restaurant meal. That author, Alan, followed that up a couple of years later with a larger patient population of asthmatics that seemed to get worsening asthma with MSG. And for us, that seemed to be a big issue because if there was a dietary factor that was contributing to worsening asthma, it'd be worthwhile to know. His initial studies had some methodological flaws that we thought perhaps we could overcome and get a better sense as to whether or not MSG was triggering asthma. So we actually looked at 100 patients, 70 of which had a particular type of asthma that's characterized by aspirin sensitivity, which was a subset of patients that had been identified as potentially at greater risk of having a reaction to MSG, as well as 30 patients with asthma who had felt pretty strongly that their asthma was worsened when they did have exposure to MSG. So we brought them into our clinical research center where they were actually hospitalized and kept on a careful diet and challenged with MSG and placebo. And of those 100 patients, we had exactly one patient who had a reaction during the initial challenge with MSG, which when we went back and then did a placebo-controlled double-blind challenge with that patient, they had no reaction to MSG. And also interesting, with that one patient, they just had a decline in their lung function but actually didn't develop any symptoms. So this added to a body of literature now that's pretty robust with regards to the lack of impact of MSG on asthma.
Right. Is there any reason you would recommend that someone steer clear of MSG?
No, I mean, I really can't come up with a good reason why you would want to avoid some very delicious foods with regards to concerns with MSG. I think of all the things that are in the literature, there's been one case report that seemed pretty valid with someone who was getting repeated angioedema, and when they took MSG out of their diet, they got better. But with regards to headaches, with asthma, with all sorts of other things that have been associated with MSG, there just really hasn't been any robust scientific data to support that.
Well, you present such a clear-cut scientific case that it almost sounds like you're being paid by the MSG industry here to defend it.
Yeah, no, we had funding from the International Glutamate Technology Society when we did our initial study, as you know, hospitalizing patients and doing an inpatient challenge study can be somewhat expensive. However, that was an unrestricted educational grant. They had no input into the study design, into writing our manuscript, and the manuscripts were accepted at a peer-reviewed journal. I think if you look at a number of the studies that have been done, some of them have been sponsored by the industry that makes MSG. But if you were going to talk about a wholesale conspiracy, it'd be very hard for a bunch of scientists to not want to come up with the definitive evidence that MSG is problematic since it's so widespread and are used throughout all the cultures around the world.
Yeah. I want to bring on another voice to add to our conversation. Fuchsia Dunlop is a James Beard award-winning cookbook author. Her books include Every Grain of Rice and Land of Plenty. She joins us in the very early morning hours, 12 hours from Beijing. Welcome, Fuchsia. Thank you for staying up late till almost 4 in the morning here.
Hello.
Tell us, do you use MSG in your recipes?
No, I don't use MSG in my recipes. And that's really because my whole work is about trying to get Westerners to appreciate Chinese food. And I think that Western prejudice about MSG has been one of the biggest obstacles to people appreciating this marvelous culinary culture. So I think it would be counterproductive. And also because I don't think you need to use refined MSG in food. If you use good ingredients and traditional umami-rich foods such as cured hams, shiitake mushrooms, chicken broth, you don't really need to that heightening sensation of refined MSG.
Mm-hmm. And that word umami is Japanese, is it not?
Yeah, it's the word that the Japanese scientist who actually isolated MSG from seaweed in a laboratory in 1908 gave to its delicious taste. And that's the word that has kind of stuck to describe monosodium glutamate and other related umami compounds.
Mm-hmm. This is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. I'm Ira Flatow, talking with Fuchsia Dunlop, James Beard Award-winning cookbook author. People still steer clear of MSG, but they love that umami flavor, you know? But you're saying you don't have to put MSG in it. You can cook with other foods and get that flavor out of it.
Yes, I mean, you can use, I mean, really, MSG or umami is something that cooks have been playing with for centuries in all different culinary traditions. But monosodium glutamate as a refined additive like salt or sugar is something that's only been used since the early 20th century, so it is a modern ingredient.
Does MSG have the same bad reputation in China that it has here in the West?
Well, no, not really. I mean, it's extremely widely used here in China, whereas in Western food, no sort of respectable high-ranking chef would be using MSG neat in their cooking. In China, very, very fine chefs will use it. It's not just used in junk food as it tends to be in the West. So you get it used in the most expensive and the finest restaurants in China. Some people also use it at home. And you find it, you know, on the seasoning shelf in most Chinese kitchens. I did a chef's training course at the famous Sichuan Institute of Higher Cuisine, China's this leading cooking school, and MSG was used in almost every dish we made. So it's really regarded as just another sort of another flavoring at the disposal of a cook, like soy sauce, vinegar, sugar, and salt.
When you started doing Chinese cooking or eating in Chinese restaurants, I'm sure you heard about the same sort of thing, right?
Yes, exactly. Yes. I suppose that when I started, I was probably affected by the bad reputation of MSG in the West. But then when I saw the way that people use it in China, and although a bad Chinese chef might use lots of MSG to give flavor to mediocre food, just to pep it up and make it taste delicious, really good chefs will use it very judiciously in small amounts to round out savory flavors and make foods taste even more delicious. And it's, in some culinary contexts, for example, if you make a salad type dish with a dressing with maybe sesame oil and salt, a little MSG actually seems to cut the oiliness and create a very delicious rounded flavor. Mm. So I think that using it in small amounts can be a very good thing, really, in cooking terms.
Let me see if I can get a quick phone call in from Jeffrey in Orlando. Hi, Jeffrey. Welcome to Science Friday. Quickly.
Yes, hi.
Go ahead.
Nice to talk to you. My question was on MSG and whether there's any interrelationship between MSG and gout. I've read some of the medical literature about gout and some of the mechanism involved.
All right, I gotta go. Let me get the call in. Any Dr. Westner, any comment on that?
Well, gout can be associated with overindulgence in very protein-rich foods. But MSG itself has not been associated with the development of gout.
Do you think there's any chance that MSG is going to get its reputation back?
I think there's a number of fascinating young chefs in America that are doing their best to kind of give this knowledge of umami, and I think it should gradually begin to gain foothold. I think as people realize that the things that they love so much have this umami characteristic to it, that it'll gain its respect, hopefully.
Fuchsia, you agree?
Well, yes, and I think it's important to remember that if you call salt sodium chloride, it sounds like a nasty chemical additive. I mean, MSG, one has to ask, is it any different, really, from refined salt or refined sugar, both of which are naturally occurring substances that we use in a refined form as a seasoning?
All right. I'm going to have to break in and stop it there. Thank you both for taking time to be with us today. Fuchsia Dunlop, James Beard Award-winning cookbook author and journalist specializing in Chinese cuisine. Dr. Catherine Westner, allergist and immunologist at Scripps.